Us in our Touchpoints Rehab Interview Chair. He is the president of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League, and obviously gun control has been in the news a lot lately, particularly with Governor Malloy and Luke Bronin, the mayor of Hartford, the governor calling, for example, the NRA a terrorist organization. So Scott Wilson joins us this morning. Scott, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning, Scott, and thanks a million.
Good morning. Thank you, guys. A happy Friday.
Yeah, you too. Scott, let's start with this, and the governor doubled down yesterday, this call that the NRA is a terrorist organization. What is the reaction of CCDL?
Well, you know, naturally we stand with, the National Rifle Association, and although our two entities are different, and I'm not a spokesperson for the NRA, you know, we do recognize how much the NRA has done over the past, well over 150 years now to protect our, close to 150 years to protect our Second Amendment rights. And I do believe we would not have a Second Amendment in our Constitution anymore, or at least one that meant anything, if it was not for the efforts of the NRA over the past decades.
Wow. Why is it, though, Scott, why is it that there is so much? I mean, you would think that this was an enemy, and they're not an enemy. I could not believe, I said to Dan, I thought that maybe it was a misprint or something, when the governor labeled the NRA a terrorist organization.
Well, they're not really... I mean, they say they're attacking the NRA, but who they're really attacking is you and me and anybody believes in our Second Amendment in our society, that we have a right to keep and bear arms, effective arms, arms that will work to be able to protect ourselves in our society. They're attacking firefighters, they're attacking policemen, they're attacking military, people who are members of our military service. Essentially, it's not about the structure of the NRA itself. It's about the people, the 5 million plus people that make up the NRA. So really, they're attacking everyday citizens when they say they're going after the National Rifle Association.
Well, you know, they're trying to parse their words, Scott, so maybe you can explain this. I know why they're doing it, but they're trying to parse their words by saying even members of the NRA are for background checks, but the leadership of the NRA is not. What do you say to that?
Well, when we get into the background check, first off, right here in Connecticut, you have background checks all the way through, from private transactions all the way on up through going through a federally licensed dealer. And the overwhelming vast majority of any kind of transfers that are done anywhere in this country are done through licensed dealers. The very small percentage are done typically from father to son, or, people that know each other are the ones that are typically doing that. And if somebody transfers a firearm to a person that is a prohibited individual, they are actually breaking the law. And those kinds of transactions go on every day outside of the realm of legal gun ownership. They're done by criminals selling firearms on the street. They're done everywhere. So really what they're trying to do is they're trying to find any divisive means possible to try to pit one gun owner against another gun owner. If you don't like the black scary rifles, then you're okay in their book. If you like a revolver, that's okay in their book. But I can tell you right now, if the day comes that every semi-automatic firearm were to be confiscated, if there were such a day, that, I mean, of course it's an impossibility, then the next they would go on to assault revolvers, and that's, that's what they do. They vilify a specific object, and then, of course, they vilify the members of the NRA. So, I mean, here we have the mayor of a city, Mayor Bronin. He is in a city that harbors violent criminals in a state that already fails to convict the criminals that possess or steal firearms in the first place. The abysmal 72%+ failure to convict rate of individuals that are already caught and arrested, that's the real issue. It's not law-abiding citizens who are a member of the NRA, or, they've had some words about our organization, CCDL, in the past. They've called us an extremist group. So they don't convict the criminals that are out there, and they overlook the tremendous hunting programs and the junior shooting camps that actually teach our youth to be safe and responsible with firearms you know, it's all about respecting life, and you know, I think that you know, probably every NRA member, I can't speak to the heart of every NRA member, but probably I would guess that every legitimate NRA members would not want to go out and just harm somebody for, you know, for whatever reason, for like the robbery that happened in Hartford last night.
You know, we've talked to people that are members. You got doctors, you got college professors. I mean, seriously, people say, what? Yeah, all you have to do is check it out. And these folks are not terrorists, but they are all put in the same barrel. Do you know what I mean?
Right, sure. And they would love to stereotype NRA members and gun owners in general, not just NRA members, as, forgive me, anybody out there that likes to chew tobacco, but they want that image of camo-wearing, tobacco-chilling, backwoods kind of, that stereotype. But, you know, there are English literature professors who I know that are members.
Yes, and doctors.
You know, when the day comes where you're vilified for protecting your constitutional rights that generations before us have gone and fought and died for, it's a scary day. It's a really dangerous time in America that we have to dig in and fight so hard to protect the things that our founders and framers, who we stand on their shoulders, fought for to the bitter ends against the tyrannical government from a shore away. And I do think that, you know, the governor should keep in mind and Luke Broden should keep in mind that there are 250,000 plus pistol permit holders in the state of Connecticut and new applicants every day. And when they find out that there's somebody trying to make it even harder than it already is in the state of Connecticut to obtain a permit to legally own and possess a gun, then there will be some blowback in this upcoming election.
Scott, hang in there. We're talking with Scott Wilson. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with the president of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League. Don't go away.
My friends, I have a question that I've asked a few times. You've probably heard it before. When the time comes for you to purchase a memorial for a loved one, would you rather speak with a commissioned salesperson or with the person who is actually going to design and manufacture that memorial? The answer's obvious, and that's why you need to call the wonderful family, and this is a team, Zocco Memorials. No matter if you're Catholic or Jewish, Protestant, Zocco Memorials proudly, and I repeat, proudly serves all faiths, and the person that you consult with will be directly involved in the creation of your memorial. And you will not believe the quality and the beauty of their finished products. Your loved one deserves something worthy, I think, of their memory. I believe we all look to that. And Zocco may not be the biggest place around, but I'll tell you something, they are definitely the best. They truly are. Zocco Memorials on Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield, or online at zoccomemorials.com. Zocco Memorials, creating a lasting memory. Okay, it is 7:43, 17 minutes before 8 o'clock, and time now to check and see just how the bumper-to-bumper crowd's doing.
The Talk of Connecticut, Bouvier Insurance Traffic.
That accident finally cleared on 84 eastbound. Still a slow ride from West Hartford into Hartford from exit 42 to 49. And in Hartford, 91 south is slow from exit 34 to 32. 84 westbound congested from exit 54 to 48 from East Hartford into Hartford. And in Middletown, we see the usual slow go, Route 9 northbound from exit 12 to 16. I'm Gary Lee Horn.
And we are back, Brad, and we're joined by Scott Wilson again. He's in our Touchpoints Rehab Interview Chair, president of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League. Scott, I had speculated that the reason Luke Broden, the mayor of Hartford, is making a big deal out of this NRA instruction and trying to disassociate the state of Connecticut completely from the NRA is because his gubernatorial campaign is flagging. And sure enough, in the aftermath of this big story earlier in the week, he sends out a fundraising email. But perhaps you can explain to our audience how educational this NRA instruction is when somebody goes to get a firearm permit.
Well, it's not the be-all, end-all of, you know, firearms, use of firearms, but what it does do is it makes sure that a person who goes in and they have an interest in wanting to buy a firearm for, you know, self-protection or, you know, whatever the reason is, target shooting, that they actually know how to purchase the firearm and use it safely and, you know, keep their finger off the trigger until they're ready to shoot and, you know what a squib load is and, you know, the things that can, you know, imperil somebody that's operating the firearm or somebody in proximity of the firearm. So it's a very basic course, but I do think that people, especially these days, there's a considerable amount of first-time gun owners that are out there because, quite frankly, when people start to hear that somebody wants to try to curtail your rights to gun ownership, people go out and they flock, and first-time buyers go out and they want a gun, and the only experience that they oftentimes have ever had with firearms is watching them on a TV or a movie screen. So, you know, it's not like the movies, you know, and it's important to have, I think, some hands-on operation to learn how to safely use a gun, and that's what the NRA Basic Pistol Course does. There are other pistol courses that are approved out there, but I would go so far as to say that if, say, the NRA's program were, you know, deleted as Luke Brennan's so-called, you know, wish it were, from the training module required for a permit, the issuing of pistol permits probably would come to a screeching halt in the state. It is by far the largest and most sought-after class that we have in the state to apply for, to qualify for a pistol permit.
So what you're saying then is that this is what they want. This is what they want to do.
Oh, yeah, sure. I think, you know, between, you know, last year we fought hard and were victorious over the $300 increase that Governor Malloy, you know, proposed in his budget for pistol permits. And so he couldn't get that. So, you know, I don't know who hatched this harebrained scheme of trying to delete the NRA from the state statutes for pistol permit qualification. But, you know, I would say that, you know, they would like it harder. They would like it to become something where it's not as easy to get a permit in the state of Connecticut. And I think, you know, that's what they're trying to do, is they're trying to pick apart the people who want to be able to exercise their rights and find ways to disqualify them and find ways to make it cost prohibitive and look for any excuse they can, because they really want this. This is a cultural thing, that they can make gun ownership a dirty word and something that is culturally insensitive, and there's something wrong with you because you want to own a gun, they will pursue that. That is part of their campaign, and they've been testing the waters with this for a while.
Okay, so this is fascinating. Just to be straight, so I get it set in my mind here, if the NRA is removed from the instruction process here in the state, you're saying that these gun permit applications would grind to a halt?
Well, right, because there aren't enough instructors with these other training modules to, you know, be able to have the classes filled. The classes would be, you know, what few there are, the classes would be overwhelmed, and it would take a very long time for instructors, people familiar with the training aspect of firearm safety, to implement these other models.
But you know something, Scott? You know what it would do? It would open up the doors for people to come and buy illegal firearms.
That may be the case, and you know, your listeners right now should probably, if they have been on the fence, and I don't see them being able to successfully do this, but you know, if people out there, your listeners are on the fence and they've sort of wanted a gun but not really, and they've never really bothered, you know, to this point, it wouldn't be a bad idea now to start, you know, booking a class and get at least getting the safety
training out of the way.
It's, Scott, are you, I don't know if you're under the gun. Can you stay with us through the break?
Sure.
Okay, terrific.
Good.
Back with Scott Wilson.
This is,
this is a big story, Brad.
Huge story. Yep. And necessary story. 10 minutes before the hour.
I'm Jennifer Kishinka with Your Money Now. Investors are awaiting the February jobs report with wage growth in the spotlight. Economists are expecting average hourly earnings to have risen 0.2% with an overall jobs gain of 220,000. That investors might be apprehensive is understandable after January's upbeat jobs report triggered a meltdown for stocks last month. Investors are wary of indications that the labor market is tightening up, which could boost wages and inflation, in turn denting the value of stocks and bonds. Rapidly rising inflation could also add pressure on the Fed to speed up its rate rise. Texas regulators that killed two earlier deals for a major piece of the state's power infrastructure, Oncor, have given the nod to Sempra Energy's $9.5 billion deal for a majority stake. California Sempra was the winner of a competition that lasted years, a contest for the thriving transmissions business that dominated the bankruptcy of Energy Future Holdings Corporation, the former TXU Corporation. On Wall Street, futures slightly higher. That's Your Money Now.
Juniper Home Care is proudly celebrating its 20th anniversary. Family-owned and operated, Juniper provides nurse supervision, office support, online caregiving resources, and even compensation to care after someone 65 or older currently living in your home. Juniper offers their family caregiving programs statewide. Call 860-523-1418 or visit juniperhomecare.com. Proudly helping people stay at home for over 20 years.
Don't miss the 49th annual Home and Product Show presented by the North Central Connecticut Chamber of Commerce. March 10th from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and March 11th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Prospect Hill Road at the former Walmart site in East Windsor. Celebrity appearances by WWE legend Bob Backlund and other surprise guests. 150 booths, product demos, a raffle for a brand new washer and dryer, window treatments, and an outdoor heating system. Booth space still available. Visit nccc.org for more details.
And it's 7:52, 8 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock. And Dan, as you all know, lives in Torrington. And our friend Dr. Richard Fitchman has got a beautiful spot over there, Dan, and you've seen it many times.
Well, Brad, the brand-new Fitchman Eye Center in Torrington is a larger office, plenty of free parking, located at 1144 East Main Street, conveniently located just a mile off Route 8. And just minutes from the old location at the Fitchman Eye Center's new Torrington office, you'll love the expanded optical shop and, of course, the friendly, knowledgeable doctors and staff. So, to all of our friends in Torrington, Winsted, Litchfield, Goshen, Harwinton, and the surrounding towns, be sure to stop by the Fitchman Eye Center's new Torrington office, where you'll find everything for your eyes. The Fitchman Eye Center's new Torrington office, conveniently located just a mile from Route 8, at 1144 East Main Street, also known as Route 202 in Torrington. The Fitchman Eye Center with offices in Manchester, New Britain, Hartford, and their new Torrington office.
You know, Dan, a lot of people probably don't think that this is such a big deal, but it is a huge deal, what we are talking about. And the more you get into it, the more you realize how important it is that the people know just what's going on.
Well, Scott Wilson is back with us, and he is president of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League. Scott, give us a ballpark figure if somebody wants to get a pistol permit, what they have to go through in the area of instruction. Forget about purchasing the weapon, but instruction, licensing, what is it going to cost about?
Oh, God, I think, just for the permit and, you know, filing for the permit, for the local permit, and, the whole state and local process, that's going to be about $370 by the time all is said and done. Safety course is probably going to run you another $125 on top of that. There's the time that you take to go get your permits done. The class itself is an 8-hour class. And, it is a considerable time and investment, but, you know, we have other issues here in the state of Connecticut because it's not uniform. Unfortunately, across the state, there are some municipalities that delay the process for over a year from the start of the application submission to by the time you actually get your permit. And that's not with legitimate cause. They, you know, the state statutes under 2938 indicate that, or 2935 indicate that, state that an individual has, or an individual entity rather, excuse me, has 8 weeks to either issue the permit or deny the permit. So, you know, now we're pushing out to a year, and people are filing for appeals and all kinds of things to try to get their permits in a timely fashion, which the appeal often takes longer than it does for them to finally issue the permit. So, you know, there's little battles in towns and municipalities, and if you live in a good town, that you'll have your permit within the 8 week time frame or at least shortly thereafter. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that our organization has been fighting to try to make easier over the last nine years or so. So,
are there municipalities in particular that make the process more difficult? That could you name some that delay the process, if you will?
Yeah, right now New Haven and Waterbury are the two biggest offenders left that are out there. Middletown, I believe, has made it easier, you know, per our request to the police chief there. We're getting ready to FOIA Middletown soon to sort of check to see what their time frames for issuance are, to see if there's been actual improvement. And I have been in communication with the police chief since we've worked things out. So, you know, on good faith right now, we're hoping that Middletown is rectified. You know, so that's really it's, you know, we've had bills presented to the legislature over the last 8 years that have called for fixing the uniform criteria for the application to try to get everybody in line with the state statutes. And 1 year it actually, you know, went through the House unanimously, and then Don Williams, former pro tempore, would not raise the bill in the Senate. Mm. So then the legislative session died.
Wow. So it's just Waterbury. Does that surprise you?
No, they're, you know, they've been reluctant and remiss to try to work with the applicants there. And they are the ones, when there are hearings in front of the Board of Firearms Permit Examiners, which is the quasi-state and private entity that hears the, you know, listens to the hearings, they are always number one in the number of applicants that have been denied permits or not issued permits.
Wow. So just to be clear again, Scott, repeat to our audience why, off of what's just unfolded over the last few weeks and this week, people who have had a desire to get their pistol permit and take the course, if they haven't done it, why they should get it in gear now.
Well, I mean, it's the writing's on the wall that this is, you know, a new platform that certain candidates for office are running on, and it's to demonize and vilify gun owners. And I don't think that, you know, their efforts will get any legs underneath them, at least in a substantial manner, because we do have a long tradition of legal gun ownership in Connecticut, and, you know, people like the idea that they can, whatever hoops they jump through, eventually they'll get their permit if they're not somebody that's unsuitable, which is, you know, sort of a vague term that the state has in their back pocket if they wanted to deny somebody. But, you know, I'm somebody that, you know, I never owned a gun until after 9/11, and I thought, you know, this crazy world that we live in and how dangerous things seem to be getting at that time, it was just something that I wanted to do to be able to have the immediate means to protect myself and my family. And I think that there's never a bad time, as long as you are mentally ready, to go get that permit.
Okay. Very interesting.
Scott, really, this has been very educational, and we're going to continue to remain on top of this story, but you've certainly added some new dimensions to what's unfolded here, and we thank you very much for being a guest this morning.
I appreciate being on, and I hope to talk again soon, and we'll update as we go.
You bet. Thanks. Take care.
Boy, it really, Dan, is interesting.